Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up, John Jastrzemski of The Ringer SNY will join us. We will go over championship weekend, get his thoughts, Patriots, Broncos, Rams, Seahawks, and even talk a little baseball. Mets making some moves, Yankees bringing back Bellinger, but not doing much else. So it'll be nice to talk a little bit of baseball. But let's get to the championship games. I've talked about it a little bit this week. I like both dogs. Now, it worries me. You can't seem to find anybody. And basically, with my depression with Miami losing, I haven't listened to as much as I usually have. But everyone I listen to, everyone you talk to, pretty much says the same thing, that this line is inflated with Denver, which I think it is. That was my first reaction. I was expecting the line to be, you know, 2.5, 3. Maybe you get the hook in 3.5. I thought that would be much. I just think this is inflated by a couple of points like everybody else does. But that makes me nervous. It makes me nervous nobody else is picking the Patriots. And just because it's inflated doesn't mean those extra couple points you're getting or you think you're getting, it doesn't mean they come to fruition. I mean, this could be a dead even game and the Patriots could pull away and win by a touchdown, you know, in overtime. Or the Patriots could just win the game 30-0. I mean, just because it does, I mean, the look ahead line, there's just no way to justify the Patriots going from being a slight dog to a 4.5, 5.5 point favorite. It's mostly 4.5 now. If you missed the 5.5, I know you don't like taking the worst of the number. It's probably not going to land on 5. Famous last words. 5 is not anywhere, you know, it's not a key number. I don't say anywhere close to a key number, but because with a low total, you never know. And that one time you get burned by the half a point on a random number, it stings. It certainly does. But I could only look towards the Broncos here. I like the Broncos. You know what? I think the Broncos win the game. I think Stidham will play fine. Sean Payton has had a track record, a history here of playing pretty well with backups, whether it was New Orleans when he had, you know, the Winstons of the world, or he pieced together with Taysom Hill. He's a good coach. He rubs people the wrong way. He's arrogant, but he is a good coach. He's home. I guess they've got a good defense. I mean, they've got a pretty good defense. They have not played great defense the last month, 6 weeks of the season. You know, Jacksonville tore him up. The Bills tore him apart. This is not a great defense. I don't think anybody has a great defense anymore, although Houston is pretty close. Houston has got a really nasty defense, or they had one. I guess I got to talk about them in the past tense because they're eliminated. But it's still a good defense, good offensive line. The weapons aren't bad. I still don't completely buy this Patriot team. May first start on the road here. I will pick Denver to pull the upset. If you're looking from a prop perspective, there's not that much that jumps out to me. Pop Douglas is a guy, the Patriots receiver, DeMario Douglas, that has been targeted a lot. He scored the first touchdown last week on that ball that was tipped. He caught it, and it was fourth down, and that was a big play in the game. Kind of an underrated play in the game because that was about to be a turnover on downs and Houston ball. And who knows? Maybe with how bad Stroud was, it wasn't going to matter. But that's one. I mean, that never gets completed. When it gets deflected that late, to be completed right there is just, I want to say luck, but a hell of a play by Douglas, maybe a combination of both. But Douglas caught the first touchdown last week, was targeted in the end zone, and would have scored the first touchdown the week prior against the Chargers. The ball sailed over his head, so he doesn't get a ton of targets, 2-3 per game. He gets a carry here or there. I know he's dealing with a hamstring injury late in the year, but with Sertan and the matchups, from a matchup standpoint, I think Sertan will be on Kayshon Booty, who's been, you know, kind of a breakout star here in these playoffs, made some tremendous catches, including the one last week. I think it could be more of a Douglas game where you got to look at some other guys. You got to look to the slot and Douglas. So I could see Douglas, you know, 22-1 to score the first touchdown, plus 475 anytime touchdown scorer. For some reason, they don't have his number on over-under receiving yards or over-under catches. It's usually low, I've noticed with him. It's in like the high teens. So that could be one to look at. He's been targeted lately. He could be a little bit of a, you know, diversion where your big guys are going to be covered by their best players, so maybe you have to go somewhere else there. And if you do like Denver in the game, you know, Patriots throwing could be a scenario here that comes to fruition. So Douglas overs, Douglas to score a touchdown. If you're looking 22-1 first touchdown, not a terrible look there, even though I do like Denver in the game, and I don't like doing that where you start to look at somebody first touchdown when you like the other team in the game. But not a bad bet for all those reasons I mentioned. But I think Denver wins the game. I'll call it 23-17 Denver wins. It is reminding me a little bit of, it's a decade ago now, it was New England at Denver in the AFC title game, same window, the early game. It was Peyton Manning's last year, and Denver won. Patriots were the better team. Patriots actually favored by 3.5 on the road. But Denver's defense was so good that year, and they were a great defense that year. If they had prime Peyton Manning with that defense, I don't think they would have lost a game. So same AFC title game. And then the Super Bowl was in San Francisco, so you got some similarities there with this Broncos situation. And another situation where the Broncos are trying to play around their quarterback, trying to win with the rest of the team, you know, defense, running game, trying to limit the quarterback and not have him win the game by himself. That was the case with Peyton Manning, and that's the case this year. And it is very strange before we get to Rams-Seahawks. Every AFC title game, you look back, it's Mahomes, it's Brady, it's Peyton Manning. You throw in a couple Burrows, a couple Allens, a couple Roethlisberger. It's basically Peyton Manning, Brady, Mahomes are in this title game every year since, you know, your kids, depending on how old you are. For the last like 25 years, it's the same handful of quarterbacks. And the fact that there's obviously two quarterbacks every year in this game, and you got the same, you know, five, six guys for a couple of decades. You know, throw a random Sanchez in there. Flack was in there a couple times, but it's basically the same handful of quarterbacks. So it is unusual here to have May versus Stidham, but I will pick the Broncos to move on and go to the Super Bowl. And I think they will play the Rams. I will take the Rams here. I like them plus the points. To me, these are two, the teams are too evenly matched to lay points. I know all things are not equal because the spot is better for Seattle. Seattle will bye in week one of the playoffs, the wild card round, and they had a bye pretty much last week in San Francisco. But who knows? Maybe Darnold is still hurt. The last matchup where the Rams won the first one, the second one, they're up by 16. If the Rams had won that, you'd probably look at this differently. One game landed on one game landed on two. I know you don't trust the Rams special teams. McVay in a big spot can do some strange things, but I still trust McVay and Stafford over Darnold. And McDonald's good, but we got to see McDonald do it, you know, in a big game as well. I don't quite trust Darnold as much as Stafford. I'll take the points, and I'll take the Rams to win the game. Part of it too, you don't want to, I'm going to pick the Rams plus the points, I'm going to pick the Seahawks to win, and then you're right either way. That's just cheap. I don't like to do that. I felt bad doing it, Miami versus Ole Miss, where I was like, I think Miami's going to win, but I would take the points. I mean, sometimes the points are the play, even if you don't necessarily think the team is going to win. But I feel from, especially picking a game this big, I don't want to pick one team to win, but the other team to cover. Say we get both dogs. I will say we get both dogs to advance here. And if you want to just, you know, have some action on a game, parlaying both dogs, like plus 575, DraftKings has this market, and it's Rams to beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl. So you got to have a three-team parlay. You need the Broncos to win this week, the Rams to win this week, and then the Rams to beat the Broncos in a couple weeks. Plus 850, that's not terrible. If you get the first two home, if you get Rams and Broncos home, you're in hell of a position to either ride that out on Super Bowl Sunday or play back whatever you want to play back on the Broncos plus the points and set up a fat middle, because the Broncos will be over a touchdown favorite, or the Rams will be over a touchdown favorite, even if you got to adjust a little bit for the fact that the Broncos wins, didn't probably looks pretty good, and you upgrade the Broncos, all those things considered, you're still going to be a pretty healthy favorite if you're the Rams here, and that would be a nice, you know, plus 850 ticket to have. I've seen some plus 800, so shop around. I know Circa had 9-1 on Thursday morning, but to me, anything over plus 750 or higher, I think is worth a play. Otherwise, once you get 7-1 or lower, why not just, you could just take the Rams and the Broncos to win, parlay them, and get the plus 550, plus 575 or so, and just not have to worry about 2 weeks and have that money in your pocket and then figure out what you want to do in a couple weeks. But Rams over Broncos for an exact matchup is one I like, and I think that's the Super Bowl we get. Should be fun. Should be fun. It's definitely going to be a weird weekend, and you start to get to this where, all right, this day we don't have no more Thursday football, and then no more Saturday football, and this will be the first Saturday without football. And it's definitely a turning the page kind of week, because, I mean, let's face it, you have these 2 weeks. You have this week and the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. That's 3 weeks where we have a few games. Not that football season's over, because I do think Championship Sunday is one of the best days of the year. First couple days of March Madness. I would throw the NFL draft in there. Opening NFL Sunday is a great day. It's, I don't know that. It's hard to pick a baseball day. You said baseball opening day is a good one. There are some days in October where you get all the baseball playoffs and all the college football, NFL, where those things intersect. But that's not just one day that's the same every year. So it's hard to put one of those. But you get the idea. Conference Championship Sunday is one of the top five, I'd say top 3 days of the sports calendar, just because it's two, it's two games. You don't have the Super Bowl. You have to wait till 6 o'clock, 6:30 at night, and it's there's a 2 hour halftime show in the middle. I know it's not 2 hours, but this huge halftime show in the middle. It's two football games. It's back to back. You get two of them. Chances are at least one of them is going to be good. They'll probably both be competitive. So I love Championship Sunday. I'm really looking forward to it. Rams versus Broncos are the picks. I love them both plus the points, and I'll pick them both to win here. So like I was saying the other day, unless you get Rams Broncos, unless that's the only one that's not a rematch of a recent one. We've seen all these other ones recently, so we'll see. Before we get to John Jastrzemski, Mets have made a nice little pivot here. I haven't talked baseball in a while. They get Bo Bichette. They get Luis Robert. Those guys are banged up a lot, but those guys are good players. And then they trade for Freddie Peralta. So I mentioned it the brief time I talked about it with, I think, Dave Ross and Jeff Parles. You knew this wasn't going to be the team. Once Diaz left, once Alonso left, you don't want to sit there and just completely panic because you know that's not going to be the team. And why judge an unfinished product? Well, they're going to add players, so why not just wait till they add players to judge the team? They're going to be a good team. Who knows if Wheeler can bounce back for Philly? They lose Suarez. It feels like that lineup is aging a little bit, even though they're still good. And you know, they got more pitching coming. Maybe they'll be a playoff team, but I think the Mets slightly better than Philly. And who knows how Atlanta responds? Atlanta was a disaster last year. Strider was awful. You know, questions at closer. The everyday lineup, those guys all regressed. Wouldn't be shocked if they bounce back, but I think the Mets plus 180 here to win the division. I'm surprised they're not the short shot. Philly is the short shot at plus 160. That surprised me. I think the Mets will be okay. I think the Mets will be better than okay. I think the Mets will be pretty good. And Cohen's aggressive. Cohen will keep adding. He'll add to the deadline. Maybe he'll – I don't know who's left to add in terms of free agents as Bellinger goes back to the Yankees. Not that Bellinger was a perfect fit anyway, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Mets are win the division, NLCS. I mean, to sit here and predict – what's going to happen at division round next October is just impossible. But the Mets are one of the handful best teams in baseball. Nobody's the Dodgers. They're not the Dodgers. But as far as second best team in the National League, maybe second best team overall, they're in that conversation at the very least. They've done a nice job pivoting. I love the pitching. You know, Peralta, we'll see what they get out of McClain. Holmes, you can't really trust. He's okay. Sango, see if he bounces back. They could still use one more lockdown starter. But these starters have been devalued to the point where you just try to get 5-6 innings out of them anyway. That came back to bite them because they got too cute with it last year. But good lineup. I mean, you got Lindor and Soto, and you throw in Bichette, Robert. That's a good team. I mean, that's a good nucleus. It seems like the chemistry was something that they needed to. You don't hear much about chemistry in baseball. The chemistry was something to the point where you hear it so much, you figured it had to probably be an issue. They maybe straightened that out. But, I mean, you got Lindor and Soto to begin with. That's a hell of a core to start with. And then add Bichette. I think Robert being in a winning environment, there's a lot of talent there. Maybe you get the most out of him. Polanco's a decent ball player. And you traded for Simeon. It's a good team. That's a good team. So Yankees are just going to basically run back the same team that wasn't good enough last year. I know you get Cole back. They signed Bellinger. They had to get Bellinger. But here's the thing. That can't be your prize of just, oh, wow, we got Bellinger back. You couldn't afford to lose them, but the fact that you got them doesn't make you any better. I mean, it's still a team that struggles to score runs around Judge. Granted, it was the pitching that fell apart in the Toronto series, but they didn't replace Soto. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I said it the day they lost Soto. There was no replacing him. Chisholm was fine. Bellinger was good. I mean, these guys were good, but having two of the three or four best hitters in baseball back-to-back was just special to watch, and now you can kind of pitch around Judge. One of these years, and maybe it's not this year because he was awesome last year and he was really good in the playoffs. One of these years, Judge probably is going to start to regress at some point. He's not going to be good till forever. I mean, he's a big guy. He's getting up there to the point where is he really going to be the MVP year in, year out at his age? You start to wonder how many years of that are left. So the Yankees, playoff team, they'll be good. They're good every year. They're a playoff team pretty much every year, but it's hard to see a scenario barring them improving this roster or getting something unforeseen from somebody, you know, Dominguez takes off or Spencer Jones, we've been hearing about forever. It's basically the same old team. They always run back and they're just not aggressive in free agency. They don't want to give out bad contracts. They're frugal with their trade chips. They're not going to go out and get Mackenzie Gore or get traded to the Rangers. They're not going to get Peralta. They're going to be very conservative and they're going to continue to just spin their wheels and be a playoff team and not much more. So things looking up for the Mets. Yankees get Bellinger back. As a baseball here, a couple weeks away from, it's still like a month away from spring training games. You got like 3 weeks of spring training games. So people always use pitchers and catchers. Oh, baseball's back. Pitchers and catchers. Pitchers and catchers, just guys in shorts jogging in the outfield. A week or two after that, you get spring training games, if that does anything for you. But very quickly, that turns into, unless you're a diehard and you're going to sit there and watch the prospects and track, you know, monitor spring training games, unless you're a real diehard, April 1st is spring training, or April 1st is opening day thereabouts. And, you know, it's a little early this year, last couple of days of March, which, as much as I love baseball, makes no sense when you're trying to go up the last couple of years, go up against the NCAA tournament, like Sweet 16 is when they start. But April 1st thereabouts is when you start your season, and we're still sitting here in January. So you got a good, you know, 5+ weeks still until baseball gets here. But John Jastrzemski is here. We will talk to him about all this, his thoughts on the two title games. That is next. This is Should Have Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More Podcast. You catch him at The Ringer, SNY, where he does a great job. Let's talk a little football. We'll talk a little baseball, too. It is our buddy John Jastrzemski. JJ, 3 football games left, man. What's going on? How are you?
Well, hard to believe. I mean, the season flies by every year. I feel like you can say that on repeat. This year, for me, went especially fast. And, yeah, like, Championship Sunday, I love to tell people, is the last real football Sunday of the year. Because the Super Bowl is kind of its own entity. The game starts at 6 o'clock. It's the only game in town. The Saturday games are done, so we say goodbye to that in the wild card and the divisional round. Last hurrah, man. Let's make it a good one.
Yeah, and I think Championship Sunday is probably a top 5 day of the year. I always talk about this, like, first couple days of March Madness. Depends what sports you like. For some people, MLB opening day is there. But Championship Sunday is an elite day. Two games, both of them with the winner going to the Super Bowl. It's weird, too, before we get into the games. You know, people that are old enough, and, you know, most people listening to this are old enough, Brady was in this game for like 15, 20 years straight, it seemed like. And then Mahomes has been in this game for 8 years straight. To not have either one of them, it is a very different feel here to not have either Brady or Mahomes in this game. And throw in Peyton Manning. I mean, you throw in Mahomes, Manning, and Brady, one of those guys in this game pretty much every year the last 20, 25 years, and now we get neither of them.
No question. Drake May has had an amazing season. I don't want to take that away from him. But at the beginning of the year, the idea of Drake May against Jared Stidham would not have been on my bingo card for the first game on Championship Sunday. And, you know, it's funny, Will. It seems like, and I don't know if you feel this way, the main event is the NFC Championship game. The way it is set up, I'm actually glad in a way that the AFC game is first and then we get the NFC game. Because, listen, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. The winner of Rams-Seahawks, more than likely, is going to go and win the Super Bowl.
I would think so. And the look-ahead lines, maybe if the Patriots got in, they'd be like a 3-3.5-point dog. Maybe you give the Patriots a shot, but it's hard to see Stidham and Peyton winning two of these. And Peyton, boy, with he's a good coach with his ego, man. If he ever won two of these,
you'd never hear the end of it if Jared Stidham won a Super Bowl. That's so true. But it's a nice little transition for what we're about to get into, because that line getting as high as 5.5, I think, was a little bit of an overreaction.
That is the same reaction I've had. That is the same reaction everyone I've talked to or heard. It scares me when everyone's on the same side, especially it scares me when everyone's on the dog. That being said, I don't know how you get to 5.5. I mean, Knicks is not Mahomes. He's not Allen. To get like a 6-7-point adjustment or so, I can't quite get there. So to me, it is Broncos, even though everyone seems to be on them. You tend to agree with that. Sounds like you're leaning Broncos too.
Yeah, I do. And don't get me wrong. I've picked against the Patriots in each of the first two playoff games. So for the Patriot fans in your audience, you're probably thrilled to hear the fact that I'm going to be taking the Denver Broncos. Look, it boils down to a couple of things here. Number one, Denver at home, one of the best home field advantages in football. I'm not taking that away. The drop-off at quarterback. I know Bo Nix played a really solid playoff game against the Buffalo Bills, but you're not losing a top-5 quarterback. This is not Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers in his prime going out. Jared Stidham has experience in the league. Sean Payton has a reputation for being able to get quarterbacks to be able to play, to be able to go. And I'm not buying this idea that New England now, because Milton Williams is in the lineup, is this dominant defense. They put a horrific, horrific, horrific Charger offensive line. And let's not excuse Justin Herbert either. And I roasted him after the wildcard game. He was embarrassing in that game. To have 3 points against that defense was absolutely embarrassing. And par for the course for Justin Herbert, who's stunk in every playoff game he's played in. And then last week, CJ Stroud basically said, "Hold my beer. You thought I was bad, Herbert. I'm going to go and turn the ball over 4 times. So I think the offensive line for the Broncos is the key to the game. If they can go and play a competent football game, I think Denver is going to be able to move the football. And has Drake May exactly wowed you in these first two playoff games that he's played? He's not to me. It's too many points. The question is, Will, do I grab 4.5 now, missing the best of 5.5? Is this line going to continue to plummet, or do I wait, get more New England public money, and get that baby up to 5, 5.5?
I would think the public money would come in just because it's a standalone game, championship game. Everyone's going to watch it, and I'll sit him. He stinks. I'll bet against it. I don't know. I feel like the sharper money will be on the dog, and that'll cancel it. It's probably not going to land on 5. Famous last words. 5 is kind of a dead number.
That usually, being said, I mean, yeah, it is famous last words. We say that now, and then I'm going to bet 4.5, and I'll remind you of that if it's New England by 5 on
23-18. How did it land 23-18? Boy, that never happens.
28-23. Yeah. I mean, we go on and on. But I do think Denver is going to cover the number. Do they win the game? Not sure, but too many points, too much of an adjustment, and there's been a lot of bad Patriot voodoo in Denver in the AFC Championship game, from the Champ Bailey interception to Tom Brady losing to Peyton Manning twice. Keep that in mind as you're getting ready for this one.
In the 2013 one, the Manning had the better team. That was the year the Broncos lost
to Seattle.
Yeah, they
smoked them. That was not a fluke.
But the next year, they should have won.
That was noodle on Peyton.
Yes, that team they should have won. They missed an extra point. That was one of the first years, I think. It might have been the first year they moved the extra point back, or the first couple years. The Patriots should have won that second one.
And Gronkowski made an unbelievable fourth down catch to keep that game alive, if you remember.
Yep, he did. And it's similar, too, because it's – that game is in the early window. It's a decade later. The Super Bowl's in San Francisco, so it's a little bit of a flashback. And it's hard to believe that was 10 years ago, but it's a little bit of deja vu with that. The NFC game, I mean, I like Denver more than I like the Rams, but I lean towards the Rams. I think you can make a case, all things being equal, the Rams are the slightly better team. That being said, all things are not equal. There's a rest advantage with Seattle. Rams have played 2 straight road games. Battle to the death in both of them. Seattle's basically had 2 byes. Seattle basically had a bye last week against San Francisco after the first round bye. I think, you know, cheap threes are pretty much gone. I would still lean towards the 2.5, but I still like the Rams here more than the Seahawks laying the points. How about you?
Okay, so this might be me trying to speak this into existence. I have a very juicy Ram ticket. Got a little bit of a boost from my friends over at FanDuel, and at 27-1, I'm feeling pretty frisky going into this weekend. Now, I don't want to get on the subject of futures with you because I know what transpired with the Miami Hurricanes, and it's not quite as juicy a future, not as enticing a future. But, like, I felt like a genius all season long having this number. That said, Rams easily could have lost to Carolina. I wanted to break everything in my apartment watching that Caleb Williams fourth down throw where the defender was completely out of position, and you can look at it one of two ways. You could say, hey, the Rams are lucky to be in the NFC Championship game. That's true. You also can look at it and say, hey, this is a battle-tested team. This is a team that's gone through a couple of wars now, and if they find themselves in a war in the NFC title game, they're not going to be overwhelmed. They're not going to be intimidated. I think Seattle, it's all about game script with them. If they get off to a fast start, that defense is flying around, you don't put a whole lot of pressure on Sam Darnold, that's their avenue to winning the game. I don't trust Sam Darnold. Why? Because they returned a kick for a touchdown. They got off to a rip-roaring start against the Niners, and it was never a point of stress. There was never a point of contention. Darnold, let's not forget, last year against this Ram team, horrific wild card spot. Played him in the regular season this year. Threw 4 interceptions in the first game. And that second game in Seattle, a little misleading. Rams had and I bet Seattle in that game. Rams had a 16-point lead. Shaheed had the punt return, changed the entire game, had that weird 2-point play, ended up winning it in overtime. I think the Rams, to your point, are a more complete team. Now, Seattle healthier, yes, to some degree on defense. Not having Charbonnet is a big loss for the Seahawks. Now, all of a sudden, it's a lot more on Kenneth Walker. I'm going with the coach that's been there before. I'm going with the quarterback that's been there before. Maybe this is me trying to will that future into existence, Will. I'm not even taking the 2.5. Rams either win the game or I think they lose comfortably. I don't think this is a tight game that Seattle wins. I think it's Seattle by margin. Well, I think it's the Rams outright.
Yeah, and I grabbed an early three just because it was just a number grab for me. I didn't think the line should be three. I mean, one game landed on one game landed on two. So, I mean, if that's the case, again, those numbers get home. But it's funny. It's one of those games where, and sometimes you come across these, whoever you pick, if you get it wrong, you're going to feel like an idiot. Like, wow, did I really lay points with Sam Darnold? Did I really lay points with Sam Darnold against Stafford and McVay? On the other hand, it does feel like Seattle is fresher. So it should be fun.
The nerds and the DVOA and all the metrics are going to love Seattle in this game. They love Seattle. They're grading Seattle out as like one of the six or seven best teams of the last 25 years. Do I necessarily believe that? Not so sure.
But they have flipped back and forth. Like at certain points this year, I believe the Rams were higher DVOA. They went back and forth, I'm pretty sure, DVOA and all that stuff. Because the Rams were right up there too in terms of being dominant. And the Rams special teams kill them. The Rams special teams are concerned.
Could be a problem in this game. Yeah. Could be a problem. And on the other side, Seattle's got an outstanding kicker.
Yes.
Outstanding.
Who wins the Super Bowl?
I said at the start of the year, the Rams, don't stop me now, as Freddie Mercury once famously said. I think it is a Ram. I really want a Ram-Broncos Super Bowl, but I think the NFL, they want that Stafford-May. Let's settle the MVP on the field. Like, you can have that conversation for the next 2 weeks. McVay trying to get his revenge on the Patriots for that Super Bowl when he had Jared Goff and he laid an egg. The Rams. I'm getting a future home. Well, I'm trying to be positive.
And that would be interesting. I can't remember a scenario where you have the top two finishers in MVP. I'm sure it's happened, but that award's going to be announced Thursday night before the Super Bowl. So three days before February 5th, and then they're going to go play February 8th, and people, I'm sure, are going to rehash that debate. No matter who wins, depending on who wins the Super Bowl, that'll be interesting. But that could be an interesting scenario. And Rams Broncos. I was saying this the other day. It's the only one that's not a rematch, and a recent rematch. Rams-Patriots, we've seen it. We've seen it a couple times. Seahawks-Patriots, we obviously saw it with the Malcolm Butler game. Seahawks-Broncos, we've seen. So Rams-Broncos would be the only one we haven't seen here pretty recently.
Yeah, let's go with that. I like the sound of that.
All right, baseball. The Mets have pivoted nicely here, I think. Peralta, Bichette. I know when you lose Diaz, you lose Alonso, you trade Nimmer. It's like, man, what the hell is going on? But Bichette, Peralta, you throw in Soto, Lindor. I mean, they're going to have a good team. I think they should be the favorite in the NL East. They're plus 180. They're behind Philly, who knows what's going to happen with Wheeler when he comes back. Might not even start the season in the rotation with the injury with the blood clot, which is a scary injury. Suarez is gone. Philly is a little long in the tooth. I think the Mets are the best team in this division. I think they've pivoted nicely. What do you think?
So I agree that they have pivoted really nicely. And it's funny, a week ago, and I didn't love the fit of Kyle Tucker in the Mets, but when they lost that on Tucker, the talk in New York is, what's next for David Stearns? Well, since that signing, they go and get Bichette, who I love for the team. Puts the ball in play, gamer, good clubhouse guy. You bat him behind Juan Soto. Then they go and get Luis Robert, who's been dreadful the last 2 years. But it's a good roll of the dice. You know you're getting a center fielder with some pop. Maybe playing in a better environment, you get more out of them. Then Peralta, Mets' biggest weakness down a stretch last year, they couldn't get anybody out. I think Peralta is not like a top five pitcher in baseball, but he's probably one of the 20 best pitchers the sport has to offer, and now you put him with Nolan McClain. So everything about their offseason looks good, except for Diaz. Like, I wanted the Mets to keep Pete Alonso. I didn't think they'd be in the running for Bubba Bichette. Fine. You want to tell me that's your swap? Okay, bring in Simeon for Nimmo, whatever. You want to change the vibe of the team? Great. Diaz is the one they want to mulligan on. They absolutely messed it up. There's no way in the world you could tell me that they're better off in the bullpen with Devin Williams, who couldn't save a big game to save his life for the Yankees, and is a guy I don't trust, and is a guy that has absolutely no stones. That said, Will, they're going to be a playoff team next year. I think the Mets will absolutely positively be a playoff team. You know, you were talking Phillies. The team I would pinpoint in that division that I think is going to have a major bounce back, the Atlanta Braves. They have a new manager. They had a year from hell scenario. Healthier Braves. They always beat the Mets. That's the team I'll be betting to win the NL East.
I don't love their pitching. I mean, Strider had a expect the ERA close Terrible to five. Year. The Terrible line, year. Riley struck out a ton. Albies had it down. I understand. I never want to count them out. And I think people last year at Owen, you know, they were 10 games under. People, oh, watch the Braves, watch the Braves,
like,
and it never
dead
happened.
Dead on arrival, basically. Yeah. Between the terrible start combined with all of the injuries, never got going. don't be surprised if the manager change kind of gives them a jolt.
So you would pick them over the Mets right now to win the division. That's surprising.
I just think the Mets have major demons against them they have to answer. And game 161 2 years ago doesn't count for me because the Braves are going to make the playoffs anyway.
What a great game that was. It was a random Monday afternoon. That was just incredible.
Unbelievable. And you know, it's interesting with the Met lineup. It's more balanced. It should be deeper. They have some durability questions. You know, say Pete Alonso played every day. Brandon Nimmo played every day. Bo Bichette does not. Jorge Polanco does not. Luis Robert does not. So in theory, everything that David Stearns put together makes sense. How much are these guys going to be able to play is my question.
The Yankees, boy, just look, they'll be a playoff team. They'll be good. They're always pretty good. It's just it's running back the same team that wasn't good enough last year. I don't know. Do you have a more hopeful outlook? I know the pitching will be pretty good. You get Cole back.
No, I feel the same way. I feel the same. Now, they're going to tell you, hey, we're getting Garrett Cole back. Hey, we're going to have a full season of Caballero, Rosario, McMahon. Great. The Blue Jays didn't have Bo Bichette, and they whooped their ass in the postseason. It wasn't close. It wasn't close. Now, I think some folks are looking at the Cody Bellinger signing and they're like coming to this narrative of, oh, well, the Yankees are just running it back. They would have been significantly worse if Cody Bellinger wasn't back on the team. So to me, it's very important they brought him back. He fits the team well. He hits well in the ballpark. He's versatile. He's a gamer. He puts the ball in play. Like, there is nothing wrong with this Cody Bellinger move. In fact, it's a fantastic move for the Yankees. My problem is, what's accompanying it? And in free agency, let's be real on this, Will. I love this free agent market. Like, I'm okay that the Yankees didn't go and get, like, Michael King or Ranger Suarez. I'm all right with their starting pitching. Yeah, in a perfect world, I'd have Edwin Diaz closing games for me. But, okay, they didn't get Edwin Diaz. I think their biggest whiff at the moment is not in free agency. The biggest whiff is the fact that they don't have a leadoff hitter. And they gave Trent Grisham the $20-plus million qualifying offer. I, for one, would have preferred the Yankees get a Stephen Kwan or a Nico Horner. They need somebody to set the table in front of Judge, in front of Bellinger, in front of Stanton, in front of all these guys, and they still don't have it. They'll get bullpen arms. You can find bullpen arms. I like Bednar as the closer. Where are they finding a leadoff hitter?
And it's the same thing year in, year out. The pitching betrayed him. Freed was awful in the second game. They didn't have a starter lined up for game one because the series went three against Boston and Heel wasn't good and they just got bombed. And then, you know, Rodon wasn't good even though they won that game. But the same thing, it's the same thing every year where it's like Judge finally had his postseason, his maybe A-Rod 09 postseason, and he just, nobody around him did anything. I was at the game they got eliminated. Nobody could do anything. Judge was like Superman those last couple games, and just there was nothing around him to help.
No, I get it. But from like a pitching standpoint, I don't look at it. I don't know if you feel this way. I don't feel like devastated that Freddie Peralta went to the Mets. I mean, Freddie Peralta's a good pitcher. I think he's going to help. But I expect the Yankee rotation to be pretty darn good at some point.
I would agree.
Like, it's going to be. Now, injuries obviously can play a role. So, like, it's all well and good. We're talking about Max Fried. Hopefully he can go and withstand a year. Cam Schwitler, we both like. I think he's going to be a mainstay in the rotation. I really believe that. I think he's got the stuff. I think he's got the makeup. I think he's the real deal. Get Cole back. Get Rodon back. In theory, Will, that's your postseason rotation. In theory. Doesn't mean it's going to work out that way.
Would you pick them to win the division? Would you pick... I don't just automatically assume Toronto's going to be back in the mix. I think Baltimore.
I think any of those three teams. Yeah. Toronto, the Yankees, Boston could go and win the division.
You wouldn't include Baltimore.
Nah, I'm not there yet with them. I think they'll be better. And I think Alonso's going to help them. And I think they played much better ball over the second half of the year. I put them fourth going into the year. Like I need to see. Is that fair to say?
It's a really good division. It's a really good division.
I need to see it from the Orioles. I need to see after the abyss that they went through last year, them kind of go through it. That's me.
The one move I wish the Yankees made, it's obvious. I know why they didn't. I miss having Juan Soto and Aaron Judge hit back-to-back. I know they got outbid. Mets gave them a ridiculous amount of money. Watching those two guys, knowing they're going to get – an at bat. Each of them is going to get at bat every three innings in a big playoff game in a big spot. You're going to have Soto and Judge coming to play.
Yeah,
I
mean, you had Big Poppy and Manny Ramirez.
Yep, sure did.
That's what you had. But in all seriousness, watching the Yankees last year, I didn't, and Soto had a great year, and I wanted him back. This is not revisionist history. I didn't watch the team day in and day out and say, man, this team really misses Juan Soto. I didn't feel that well. I didn't. And even in the postseason, I didn't feel that.
I missed having him. I missed having him in the playoffs. I missed just having him come up after, you know, just him and Judge.
Great at-bats in the postseason in 24.
Unbelievable. I still go back and watch that Cleveland at-bat sometimes. I don't know if you've
rewatched
it.
The Cleveland at-bat, and really the entire postseason, he was great. They lost to Toronto, though, because up and down the lineup, there was if you put that Toronto series and you put Juan Soto on the team, you'd still have the same problem, basically 5 through 9 within the order. It was just dead weight.
Yeah, they missed opportunities game one. Judge struck out with the bases loaded. Then the bullpen just blew up. And then before you know it, Fried blows up. They're down 2-0. And they could just, once you're down 2-0, you're in a lot of trouble. Last one before you go. How are you feeling about your Dolphins? And, boy, I laughed when I saw it. McDaniels, I think, will do well with the Chargers. I can't think of a more just an odder personality combo between
Harbaugh and
McDaniel. I can't imagine
and
what that's
going to
be like. And
I figured, Will, he would go to a place where he could position himself to be the head coach. Like, I thought Tampa was where he was going to end up because Todd Bowles is obviously older. And I'm like, he could go there, have success with Baker. Then all of a sudden, Todd Bowles retires. He can go and take that job over. He will put up big regular seasons with Justin Herbert. He will. And Jim Harbaugh's a really good coach. The same questions for Mike are going to be there, though, when he goes. I think going and seeing Harbaugh's like leadership and the way he commands a room, like in theory, that should be a good thing for McDaniel and moving forward. But then again, he spent all those years with Kyle Shanahan, so it's like, okay. It's all well and good to be a part of it when you're, you know, the secondary guy. But when you're the lead dog, can you do it? And look, it's two things. One, I understand why the Dolphins moved on from McDaniel. I, for one, was intrigued with keeping him for another year because his offense still, I think, is intriguing with a different quarterback. Moving on from Tua, seeing what he could do with somebody else. But they want synergy. That's what these teams want. And at least you're not going to have, like, the GM comes in, he inherits the head coach, everybody's on a different, like, program, platform. No. Dolphins said, we're getting everybody on the same platform, we're getting everybody on the same program, and we'll see. Listen, I couldn't tell you if Jeff Hafley's going to be a good head coach or not. He's a coordinator. Any of these coordinators, despite what anybody may tell you, it is literally a flip of a coin.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You need to see them in action. You need to see if they can do the job, right? Like, Mike McDonald. Did anybody say Mike McDonald, this guy's going to be a slam dunk head coach? All right, he spent time around John Harbaugh, but you don't know until he has the job. You don't know. Adam Gase was a world-renowned offensive coordinator with Peyton Manning. How'd he do when he had the job? Everybody loved Josh McDaniels when he was with the Patriots. He couldn't lead. So when you have your chance, you got to show, hey, can I lead? Can I develop a staff? Can I build a program? We'll see if Jeff Hafley can do that. You know where it starts? Quarterback. And you're not getting one in this draft because other than Mendoza, the quarterbacks stink. I don't even want the Dolphins to draft a quarterback. I think best case scenario for them is they end up with Malik Willis on a prove-it deal. You see what you have there? If it's not any good, you draft the quarterback next year.
Two is 100% done. They're just going to swallow the money.
There is absolutely positively no way he's the quarterback of the team next year.
Do you think he's a starting quarterback next year anywhere? Or no? Is it one of those deals where he goes somewhere where there's a rookie and he kind of mentors that
Maybe,
kind of thing?
You never say never because the quarterback position in the NFL is so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad. Like, you get in the right environment, you get in the right system, but my counter to that, Will, is it ever going to be as tailor-made for him as it was
That's
with 100% McDaniel?
Right. He was in Miami,
listen,
good
I think
weather.
A lot of
he
it,
was, yes.
A lot of it with Tua is health-related, too. You know, everybody looks at the concussions. You should. You should also look at the hip injury. That hip injury zapped his mobility. He re-aggravated it last year at the end of the season. And that's why he didn't play the last two games of the year. And that's why when he came back this year, it was obvious he couldn't move. Forget about running. Within the pocket, he couldn't move the same way he did 2 years ago. Game, set, match.
Slow, short, don't have a big arm. Those are hard things to overcome. You can, I mean, you can be served. It's almost like a pitcher doesn't have velocity. Yeah, you can change speeds and hit corners, but when you have those limitations, small guy, not a lot of mobility, not a lot of arm strength, those are a lot of boxes being stacked against you.
No question. Yeah. So, I honestly, if I'm Tua, I got all that money in the bank. I guess you can get more as a backup quarterback, but I'm going to say he ends up with, like, the Raiders with, like, Mendoza next year.
That's funny because before you said Raiders, exactly the team I was thinking. I could see him going to the Raiders. They take a shot. Like, I don't know. These guys play right away. I don't know how much they'd invest in.
I don't know how the Raiders can sit Mendoza. I mean, I don't know how they can. I don't know how you can. Like, you know, you want to sell tickets. You want to have buzz. They're dying for it. I feel like you bring a guy like Tua in. You say, oh, we're having a competition. But come on.
Right.
Mendoza's your quarterback.
JJ, you're the best, man. SNY, Ringer, where else can we find you?
No, you nailed it. We got the two pods on a Ringer, Rock and Roll in New York, New York, Ringer Gambling Show, and then nightly Honda Sports Night on SNY.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Monday. We will have a Super Bowl to discuss. We're not going to talk about the Super Bowl for two straight weeks, I promise. We'll mix in some other things, but the Super Bowl will be set by the next time we talk. Enjoy the games. Enjoy shoveling your driveway if you live in the East Coast and you're supposedly, every time you look, you're getting a foot more of snow than they said last time. So a lot of snow, a lot of cold weather, and a lot of football this weekend. Enjoy it. See you Monday.